Hey, everybody, Andrew Colvett here filling in for Charlie. We have Chris DeGaulle from the Herzog Foundation talking about the campus protests where parents in California are suing the government for teaching fake history about Hamas and Israel, as well as some interesting policy prescriptions that our friends, Senator Rick Scott and Tim Scott, are proposing, as well as the tyranny of the uniparty with Josh Hammer from Newsweek. We go into the country class versus the ruling class. This is a dichotomy you need to know and you need to be aware of and start using in your daily vernacular and your discussions with other people. The country class versus the ruling class. If this show means something to you, I know it means something to me. You help keep us independent and free from the censors by joining members.charliekirk.com, members.charliekirk.com. Become a monthly subscribing member of this show and this community where you get exclusive access to Charlie, exclusive videos, exclusive columns, and you get to join our weekly members-only AMA where you get to ask Charlie questions live on the radio. So please consider joining members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
They are counting on your surrender. If you give up, they win. But what if we look back and we realize we were just inches away from victory, and that's when we decided to give up?
Join us and thousands of American patriots for the summer convention that all are invited to.
You're going to hear how we're going to win in 2024.
With the biggest speakers in the movement, featuring President Donald J. Trump.
We're going to fight and we're going to win.
Charlie Kirk, Vivek Ramaswamy, Governor Kristi Noem, Dr. Ben Carson, Steve Bannon, Candace Owens, Lara Trump, Senator Rick Scott, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Benny Johnson, Jack Posobiec, and more. June 14th through 16th.
2024 is our final battle.
In Detroit, Michigan.
The great silent majority is rising like never before.
Join us for the People's Convention.
This is a new ball game, everybody. You send a message. We play to win.
Register now at tpaction.com/peoples.
We have a very special guest right now, Chris DeGaulle. He's the host of Salem 990, The Answer in Philadelphia, and he's also the VP of content for the Herzog Foundation, which has thelion.com, readlion.com, readlion.com. We're going to go over some stories here. These guys are at the front lines of creating content that you want your children, your grandchildren to be consuming, learning from. So, Chris, without further ado, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. Glad to have you back.
Hey, good to be back, man. Great to see you.
Yeah, well, you guys, I hate to look at it in such terms, but a lot of people, a lot of Americans are across the country having their eyes opened to the fruits of indoctrination, the infiltration of our educational systems from a very young age, by the way. This isn't just happening at college. You're seeing the fruits of it by the time these petulant brats at college have these ideas fully bloomed. But you guys are hitting it from all ages, and so it's an important time to have you on the show. So, Chris, I want to just start. We've got a couple stories we're going to get into here that you sent along, very important stuff. But just give me your take. You're in the belly of the beast, too, in Philadelphia. I mean, what is your initial reaction to this? What are people in Philadelphia, how are your listeners reacting to this campus protest movement that's sparked across the country?
Yeah, it's happening on virtually every major college campus. As you know, Andrew, Penn certainly had its own protest, probably not as high profile as Columbia or NYU, but they had them. Of course, Penn is also where the whole Leah Thomas, Riley Gaines, transgender movement as we know it today exploded. So Penn, no stranger to the woke agenda, for sure.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, but like I said, I think people are having their eyes open to this. And, you know, what's striking to me in this current moment is that all of this started because of October 7th, really. I mean, but it's the new thing, right? It started with BLM and then it was Antifa and, you know, and now it's the pro-Hamas crowd. But we're seeing these stories pop up because, you know, I think this Hamas-Israel conflict, you know, like I said, it's the newest thing, but a lot of their justification, their moral rationale for it starts from an uneducated place about what's really happening overseas. And you have two stories here that I think are really interesting. First one, California's school system is sued over falsified history about Israel-Hamas war. And again, you can get these at readlion.com. Chris, tell us about this one.
Yeah, this is a story of it really is sort of a cousin of culturally what we see so much of schools indoctrinating, harboring transgender kids or indoctrinating kids, anti-Israel agendas and curriculum and hiding it. Moreover, hiding it from parents, keeping it a secret. And so the Deborah Project and this story that we've covered at readlion.com, they've gotten involved to sue the Berkeley Unified School District to turn over the curriculum. And of course, now that it's been exposed, what you find is virulent anti-Semitic content. And this starts at a very young age, Andrew. As you said, I mean, this in yet another story, not to jump ahead, but kind of the broader picture of all of this, of course, is the fact that starting as early as kindergarten and straight through 12th grade, these kids that we see on these college campuses today, they don't know anything except just activism. They don't know what's behind it. And I know Charlie had the clip this week. I know you've heard it. These two girls from NYU that show up on the campus of Columbia and they say, "Do you know why we're here?" "No, I don't really know why we're here." And literally said the words, "I wish we were more educated." That clip, that was the personification of where we are today.
Yeah, I mean, so how this story out of California where they're suing over this, you know, propaganda that's being pumped into the schools. What age groups are we talking about here, Chris?
Yeah, in this particular story, you're talking about kids as early as grade school. And that's,
of course,
you would think it's a high school curriculum, but no. I mean, this starts at grade school and there's a commitment, you know, kind of philosophically, Andrew, the problem we have now, and I ask this question a lot of public school teachers who have been doing it for a long time. I say, what kind of people are coming out of college to teach public school? And nearly every one of them answers some form or fashion of the same thing, which is those on the left that have an agenda. It's maybe that was always true, but it's now just blatantly true that if you go off to school to become a public school teacher, odds are you probably have some kind of commitment to an organized agenda and civil activism, as it's known. And it's no longer about teaching, reading, writing, arithmetic, and the basics that we all understand public education, or at least we used to understand it. Today, it's about teaching activism. And that's why it's so critically important, Andrew, and it's why we focus on that so hard at the Herzog Foundation. We don't advocate for any kind of Christian education. If you want to homeschool, we hope you do. Micro school, fine. Charter school, fine. But what we all understand, what we've got to understand, is our K-12 public education, they've become left-wing indoctrination camps. And after a couple of generations of it, it's come home to roost on our college campuses across the country this week.
Well, Chris, our crack team of our video team here already has the clip 155. And this is the clip you highlighted. And it does, it proves your point perfectly. 155.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
doing about what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Yeah. Palestine will be free.
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either. Oh. I came from Colombia. I was there up at Colombia, and we came down. They said NYU students needed our support. So I came down. I heard there's lots of cops. Some people were saying it was getting dangerous.
I wish I was more educated. Well, Chris, that's what you're trying to do at the Herzog Foundation. I mean, that's what we're trying to do across the country here.
By the way, don't you know her parents, who are paying whatever they're paying to send her to Colombia, are thrilled to hear her say on television, "I wish I were more educated." What an and by the way, I'm sure the people in the admissions at Columbia were thrilled to see the clip as well. The point. Yeah. They aren't, Andrew. They aren't educated. And sadly, too many of our kids aren't educated. I don't mean to besmirch everybody in public education. My wife was a public educator for 10 years until she stayed home with our kids. My mother was one for 30 years, but they came from a different generation, as you know. And we decided to pull our kids out of public school a while back. And our daughter is now in a private Christian school. And we couldn't be more thrilled. And we saw for the first time, COVID is what kind of shook us awake. And we waited too long. A lot of people in this audience are already homeschool parents or are product of homeschool themselves or in private Christian school. And I say, good for you. I hope you'll go to HerzogFoundation.com for more resources that way. But for people who are really on the fence about it or don't know, but they see this stuff and it tugs at them, we really hope at the foundation that we're kind of the impetus, the imprimatur to help you make that leap and jump into Christian education or some alternative form of education. Because this madness, we're not going to turn the country around until we turn around a couple of generations of kids who learn civics and the United States.
You might have heard Mike Lindell and MyPillow no longer have the support of their box stores or shopping channels the way they used to. They've been part of this cancel culture, so they want to pass the savings directly onto you by having a $25 extravaganza. When Mike started MyPillow, it was just a one-product company. With the help of his dedicated employees, they now have hundreds of products, and some of you may not even know about it. To get the word out, I want to invite my listeners to check out their $25 extravaganza. Two-pack multi-use MyPillows, just $25. MyPillow sandals, $25. Their six-pack towel set, $25. Brand new four-pack dish towels, you guessed it, just $25. For the first time ever, their premium MyPillows with the all-new Giza fabric, just $25. Orders over $75 will receive free shipping too. This amazing offer won't last long. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Kirk or call 800-875-0425 today. That is promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk.
But the adults there do.
Yes, they do.
And yet, this, by the way, this is a long time coming. This has been coming since the 1960s. And now the people that were burning down college campuses, the people that were taking over presidents' offices, those people are now on the faculty senate, in the faculty senate, trying to encourage these students to do the same. They helped elect it. They helped elect Nixon. They I guess they want to elect Donald Trump in 24. Good on you guys.
Okay.
Joe Scarborough's freaking out on Morning Joe. I'm joined by Chris DeGaul from The Answer in Philadelphia, 990. Also head of content for Herzog Foundation that's helping educate a new generation of young people with the truth about America, about history. I want to highlight this other story, the Reed Lion. Lawmakers call for accountability over pro-Hamas campus violence. Now, that clip that you just saw from Joe Scarborough, he starts it by talking about, you know, people trying to talk reason to these protesters. They're shouting genocidal chants and this and that. So these are some of the chants, Chris, and you guys report this at Reed Lion. These are some of the chants. We say justice, you say how. Burn Tel Aviv to the ground. Hamas, we love you. We support your rockets too. Red, black, green, and white, we support Hamas's fight. It's right to rebel. Let Hamas give them hell. Now, these are genocidal chants. You know, I'm not going to even parse words with them. I mean, now on this show, Chris, just as by way of context, we don't support this, what we call an anti-free speech bill through Congress. But this is actually highlighting a different legislative effort that I do support. And this is Rick Scott, along with Tim Scott, have introduced the Stop Anti-Semitism on College Campuses Act, which would end federal funding for colleges and universities that support, authorize, and facilitate events that promote anti-Semitism. I think that's great. cut them off. Chris, tell us more about it.
Well, I do too. In fact, I would just say, how about just end federal funding, period? You know, that's really, sure. I mean, if you're talking about kindergarten all the way through college, let's just get out of the federal funding business altogether. Let's get federalism back into education and get the federal government out of it. That is the answer. That's what I know you believe. I know that's what Charlie believes, and most people that listen to this show believe. This, when you hear Scarborough melting down, when you hear the left melting down about what these campuses and these campus riots are causing, what they're saying is actually their politics that have been indoctrinating young kids in K-12 education are coming back to bite them now. This is Frankenstein's monster coming back to attack the village. And I would just submit to them, not that I really want to give them any kind of political advice and help, but federalism is the thing that would help them quite a bit. But now that they have codified this unholy alliance with the federal government and the Department of Education with K-12, as well as federal funding to college campuses, sorry, the horse is out of the barn, guys. You created this monster, and now we've got to live with it.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. I mean, there's so much bloat, by the way. It's not just indoctrination, it's bloat. Wasting tax dollars, the Department of Education, you could get rid of it for all I care tomorrow. I know a lot of our audience supports that. But, you know, it's creating this question of how to then deal with it, right? Yesterday, it was a very tepid condemnation from Joe Biden on these college campuses. You have the Wall Street Journal basically saying he's failing this test miserably this morning. What is your grade that you would give some of these? I mean, so you've seen different reactions, right? You've seen Florida and Texas be very aggressive, but then it was like something switched. Fordham got cleared up overnight. Then you had Columbia, Hamilton Hall got cleared up. UCLA encampment got cleared up. All of a sudden, it seems like they realize this is a real bad optical problem for them. The PR is terrible. Americans don't like this protest and the riots. What is your grade you're going to give to some of these schools for how they've handled this, and then Joe Biden?
Yeah, it's embarrassing, of course. I'm to equivocate in any way, Joe Biden and referencing, you know, anti-Islam or anti-Muslim sentiment. I don't recall seeing a single Jewish encampment on any of these campuses. I don't recall any Jewish protesters breaking things, breaking into things. I don't see any Jewish protesters behaving the way these anti-Semitic and supposedly pro-Palestinian protesters have been reacting. It's sad to see a feeble old man like Joe Biden try to figure out how to cobble together his constituency. This is a man who's been, you know, in Congress since magma cooled, and I'm sure he's as dumbfounded as the rest of us to try to figure out what's become of his party and these radical America-hating factions that he's trying to pander to now, Andrew.
It's incredible.
I'm sure it makes his head spin.
It's incredible. Yeah, he's pandering to the uncommitted votes in Michigan. Chris DeGaulle, Herzog Foundation. Check out readlion.com. Thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
All right, without further ado, we got a great piece that was actually just written by Josh Hammer, senior editor-at-large of Newsweek and host of The Josh Hammer Show. Josh, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Andrew, my friend, it's good to see you. Thanks for having me.
It's great to see you too, my friend. All right, so you actually wrote this for Tom Klingenstein, his website. It seems like it's blowing up, by the way. He's just getting a lot of great contributing writers and columnists and essayists coming to Tom Klingenstein's website. So definitely check that out. Tom's a friend of the show. We've had him on Claremont, and so he's just an amazing thinker. So it doesn't surprise me that people of your caliber, Josh, are writing for that website. So your article is entitled "The Tyranny of the Uniparty," and it's a really fascinating piece. A bunch of people sent this to me this week, so we wanted to have you on to discuss it. Tell us about your basic premise, the tyranny of the uniparty, which seems like obviously something we would agree with on this show.
Yeah, so let me just take a step back and kind of just explain, you know, who Tom is and where he's coming from and why this symposium that I contribute to, I think, is important. So, you know, Tom, as you mentioned, Andrew, is chairman of the board of the Claremont Institute. He is a patriot. He is very pro-Trump. And he supports a muscular, vigorous form of conservatism. I don't want to speak for Tom, but that is kind of his lay of the land. So I think he launched his own website, TomKlingenstein.com, basically trying to advance that vision. And specifically this symposium, I was the first or second of nine respondents, all responding to this one essay from Glenn Elmers, who was a longtime Claremont fellow, and Ted Richards, who was also kind of vaguely in the Claremont Institute's orbit. And they wrote this long 5,000 to 6,000 word essay, basically talking about how what the United States is currently experiencing is a soft form of totalitarianism. It's not the totalitarianism of the Soviet Union. It is not a hard, you know, in your face, send you to the gulag kind of totalitarianism, but it is a soft totalitarianism nonetheless. And they basically explained through a list of enumerated factors why that is the case. And there was one specific factor that I was asked to respond to, which is identifying this uniparty mentality and indeed empirical reality, we would argue, this is a feature of a modern soft totalitarianism. So the money quote from the essay, and I just want to make sure I get it right here, the money quote from Glenn Elmers and Ted Richards is this, Andrew. They say, quote, "Leadership shifting from one party to another has become a change of aesthetics and emphasis, not of fundamental aims." That is kind of the key quote from their essay that I was responding to. And I essentially agree with that premise. I essentially agree that when you have changes in leadership right now, for the most part in Washington, D.C., the current situation in the House of Representatives is a great example of that, definitely in the U.S. Senate, when you have folks like Mitch McConnell, who are the leader of the Republican caucus, you have exactly that, a change in aesthetics and emphasis, not a change in fundamental aims. And you can go issue by issue down the line, Andrew, whether it's foreign policy, whether it is reckless spending, whether it is the immigration issue, trade, the neoliberal trade agenda, selling out the American heartland to globalists, the World Economic Forum, all that. I mean, I could go down the line here. The point is, with very rare exceptions, both parties are largely in sync to the same overarching elite agenda, which is why ultimately I conclude in this essay that what we need, Andrew, are what I refer to as class traitors, who are those who might have the credentials of the ruling class. They might have gone to the right universities. They might hold fancy degrees. But their hearts, their minds, their concerns, and their sensibilities are with what the late, great Angelo Codevilla called the country class, what Hillary Clinton not so artfully called the deplorables, meaning the American heartland and the median people. We have some of those people, folks like J.D. Vance, Josh Hawley, folks who went to the right schools, but who are advancing an agenda for the country class, not for the ruling class. So ultimately, my conclusion, Andrew, is that we need to identify class traitors. That really is our mission right now.
Well, and the first class traitor of them all was, of course, well, not of Donald them all, Trump. But in recent memory was Donald Trump. Donald Trump was the guy that was adored by the ruling class and did all the fancy media, had the fancy buildings, lived in the fancy town, and he was supported by smelly Walmart people. And so and that really is underscoring this tectonic shift that we're seeing. I mean, within the electorate, right? One of the most incredible statistics that I've seen is if you look at people who vote often, they support Democrats. People who vote less often now support Republicans. It used to be completely the opposite, which is why we need to chase the ballots. We need to get out the vote organization in line. That's what we're doing at Turning Point Action. It's a huge shift. But what that underscores is kind of what you're talking about. A lot of this country class, they've been a little less checked in to the political landscape. They, you know, a lot of hunters, for example, they live off the grid. They don't want the government to mess with them. It's like 40% of them aren't even registered to vote. It's a real concern, but it shows that the changes that we've experienced under Trump are real. And by the way, they're popular. They're extremely popular.
Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? I understand. I was right where you are 2 years ago. Let me tell you why I chose the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Program. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition. There is so much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reason you gain this weight in the first place. There's no shortcuts, pills, or injections, just solid, science-based nutrition and behavior change. And finally, probably most importantly, I lost 30 pounds. Look, they're amazing. If you want to lose weight, you got to go to myphdweightloss.com. I was just texting with Dr. Ashley Lucas today. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900. Go online at myphdweightloss.com. Do what I did and what hundreds of my listeners have done and call today 864-644-1900. I recommend their program. Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition, but it's so much more. Go to myphdweightloss.com, myphdweightloss.com. Call 864-644-1900. I lost over 30 pounds. Dr. Ashley Lucas, great American. Check it out, myphdweightloss.com.
I want to reiterate this conclusion that you have, because I actually pulled it out myself, Josh, when I was reading your piece. You said, not every single Republican candidate or elected official is necessarily a part of the uniparty blob. Our difficult task is to find those such as Senators Josh Hawley and J.D. Vance who may hold elite ruling class credentials, right? J.D. went to, what was it, Yale. Josh Hawley went to, was it Princeton
also
or Harvard?
Yale.
Yeah, also Yale, who may hold elite ruling class credentials, but whose hearts, minds, concerns, and general sensibilities are decidedly with the country class. I think the country class is a really great term, actually. It's not derisive. It's actually a compliment, right? I mean, there is a virtue in the country class. There's a virtue in the heart and soul of the American populace that still is very much alive and active and really is finding their voice again in people like Donald Trump. Explain this country class. Who is this? Paint a picture for, because it's not maybe just who you might think of in your head, right? It expands and has different overlapping cohorts within it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, first of all, I wish I could take credit for the term country class and ruling class, but I can't. This terminology goes back to a fairly well-known essay in 2010 from the late, great Claire Monster, Angelo Coibella, yes, who had this famous essay heard around the world. It really was kind of a prescient prelude to Trump going down the escalator at Trump Tower in 2015. And this was the essay where he kind of coined this dichotomy, this taxonomy between the ruling class and the country class. So I think what Angelo was getting at, the country class, and certainly the sense in which I use the term, now, to an extent, it's people who quite literally do live closer to a river valley than to a coast, whether it's the Atlantic coast or the Pacific coast. But even more so than geographically where you actually live, it really is your sensibilities. I mean, at this point, Andrew, this is going to sound perhaps a little tangential, but if something as basic as the American flag itself, if you are proud of this country, if you at this point will fly and wave Old Glory, the Stars and Stripes, if you will get out of your seat at a baseball game, put your hands around your heart and say the national anthem, you are probably, whether you realize it or not, part of the country class. It's the people who believe that America fundamentally is a good and just civilization, and therefore it is worth defending. It's people who are not trying to tear it down in the name of abstract ideologies such as free market fundamentalism and outsourcing jobs to communist China, the people who are not trying to tear it down in terms of trying to forcibly export our version of democracy to third world Islamist hellholes in Afghanistan and Iraq that have no interest in our form of constitutional republic. It is people that cherish what we have and want to put the concrete policies in place, whether it is immigration, trade, foreign policy, political economy, Supreme Court nominees, is down the spectrum, the folks who want to preserve and protect our heritage and what we have. And these are the people that get besmirched by the mainstream media all the time. Hillary Clinton's use of the term deplorables, I think, here is highly, highly illustrative. That is how the corridors of power of the elite institutions in America, that is how they view folks like me and you who hold these sensibilities. And again, that happens to be the case regardless of where you physically reside. But disproportionately, it really is happening in the South, in the Midwest, in the American Heartland, the Rocky Mountain West, perhaps above all, those regions here. It has nothing to do with race whatsoever. This is an important point to make here, especially what you saw a lot of this in the polls in 2020, Andrew. So, for example, in Texas, where I used to live, the polls in Texas were in many ways astonishing. There were polls that were 95 to 5% Hispanic majority counties like Starr County, Texas, Zapata County, Texas, way down there in the Rio Grande Valley, that were basically going toss-up for Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. And again, these are hardworking, hard-scrabble, blue-collar voters who see what the deluge of uncontrolled migration patterns has done to their communities. It doesn't matter that they speak Spanish. It doesn't matter that they may be Hispanic. They see the destruction of the open borders agenda and so forth there. So it really does matter whether you cherish what we have and whether you're willing to kind of put the policies in place to preserve and protect that and not outsource it to the globalists, essentially.
Yeah, and I think what the racial dynamic is a huge one. That's why you're seeing Trump's poll numbers increase with blacks and Hispanics, minorities across the board. But it's not just poor people either, right? It's also more well-off people who aren't assimilated to elite norms, right? It's this American gentry. It's the upper middle class to the rich who live in, you know, North Dakota, Toledo, Ohio, that you know, maybe they own a car dealership or a, you know, an insurance company, right? So, you know, yeah, they're not in the hallowed halls of Princeton and Yale necessarily, but they might be what you call the American gentry, right? And but they have not assimilated to these coastal anti-American globalist norms. So, Josh, so we broke down this country versus the ruling class, the country class versus the ruling class. I think it's a really great way to sort of see the dichotomy that's growing and emerging. Often people will say, I feel like I'm living in two different Americas. How do we, and how does President Trump and the campaign best sort of focus the next couple of months to energize and expand his voting base and the people that might be drawn to him? What are the messaging, like, action items that you would have for the Trump campaign to really take advantage of this energy and expand it?
Yeah. So, Andrew, I wrote a column a few weeks ago basically saying, like, here's what Trump has to do to be victorious this fall. And in my estimation, don't overthink it. There's no need to overthink that, which is already fairly straightforward and I think simplified, which is focus on the day-to-day bread and butter issues that matter to the median country class member. What are those issues? Well, it's the economy and inflation, it's immigration and it's crime. Those are really your issues. Now, you know, you can talk a little bit about how the world is going aflame under Joe Biden, how the world is relatively stable and tranquil under Donald Trump. That's fine. But at the end of the day, most voters do prioritize, and rightfully so, domestic policy over foreign policy. And talk about those issues that, tangibly speaking, under Donald Trump were demonstrably better than they currently are under this horrific presidency of Joe Biden. Talk about the fact how inflation was very much under control for the entirety of Donald Trump's 4 years. Talk about the fact how the unemployment rate, by the way, including for black voters under Donald Trump, the unemployment rate for black voters reached the lowest metric in the history of Gallup polling on that issue. It literally reached a half century low on that particular metric. The unemployment rate, similarly, for the 18 to 35 demographic was really, really, really manageable and stable and in many ways historic in its own right under Donald Trump there. And above all, Andrew, the issue continues to be immigration. I mean, this is the issue, especially after what Senate Democrats just did to Alejandro Mayorkas in refusing to even take up a meaningful impeachment trial and dismissing those charges out of hand after the House had this historic impeachment of a cabinet secretary for the first time in 140 plus years or so. Make the border the issue. You know, Andrew, a few weeks ago, I was speaking in Ohio, and I met with a state official there. I'll leave his name off the show because it was an off-the-record meeting. But I was talking about immigration, and I said, you know, Mr. So-and-so, I understand that Ohio is not a border state. And the official cut me off and said, Josh, what are you talking about? Under President Biden, every single state is a border state. And that, I think that just demonstrably is true. It's probably the immigration issue above all that led to these Hispanics in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas voting as much as they did for Donald Trump in the 2020 election. I live in Florida. I think that issue has a lot to do with kind of the red pilling, for lack of a better term, of the Hispanic community in Florida, which, by the way, is not limited to the Cuban population. It's the Venezuelans, the Colombians, even a lot of the Puerto Ricans in Florida are getting red pilled. I think immigration has a lot to do with it there. So it's really those domestic issues, inflation, immigration, and crime. If you can focus on those bread and butter issues, I think Donald Trump's got a really, really, really good chance to prevail this fall.
All right. So, Josh, I agree, obviously. I think the bread and butter issues are going to be key. I mean, I think Trump should be walking grocery store aisles with, like, you know, a group of women that are just, like, shocked at the price of eggs, right? You know, really, yep, like, down-home sort of issues. I kind of – hearkening back to your article here, this uniparty idea, you know, is the betrayal that we've seen in the House, both the spending, this, you know, prioritization of foreign wars abroad, Ukraine, $60 billion more, Taiwan, obviously $24, $26 billion for Israel. But then we find out, you know, embedded in some of these bills is $3.5 billion for two satellite offices and NGO money to expedite even more foreigners coming in, by the way, that are, you know, probably – a fair number of them are going to be Jew haters based on the region from which they are going to come. So Americans have been betrayed by the Republicans in the House. Is that going to create negative headwinds for Trump's reelection?
Yeah, real quick. I mean, I'm not a fan of how Mike Johnson has conducted his speakership. I think that he has been a disappointment. I think that he has reneged on his word when it comes to prioritizing border security. He's also totally flip-flopped on the Ukraine issue itself. Andrew, recall that he was a Ukraine skeptic when he got the speakership. As a Ukraine skeptic myself, I was excited about that. It turns out now he's been persuaded by the intelligence community and the national security establishment. So I'm not a huge fan of the way that he has conducted himself. You know, having said that, House Republicans have a one-seat majority, and I would like to see a clear game plan for who would actually be able to get the votes to be better than Mike Johnson right now. If it gets to a vote, I would probably vote with him to depose him. But right now, unless I see a clear alternative, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what the options are right now. It's tricky. Josh, thank you for joining us. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.